This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Before we talk about what Lindsay Clancy allegedly did, we need to talk about who she was. Not because it excuses anything. Not to build a case for the defense or against the prosecution, but because if you reduce the people in a story like this to the worst moment of their lives, you don't actually understand the story. And this story demands to be understood. Lindsay Clancy was a labor and delivery nurse. But that's it for a second, because it matters more than it might seem. She didn't just work in a hospital. She worked in the room where life begins, where the stakes are highest, where the fear and the joy exist simultaneously, where mothers are at their most exposed and most vulnerable. She held women through it. She advocated for them. She knew what a mother in crisis looked like because she had seen it up close in her professional life over and over again. The cruelest irony of what eventually happened to Lindsay Clancy is that she spent her career doing exactly what no one would eventually do for her. She showed up for struggling mothers. When she became one, the system, according to lawsuits filed by both Lindsay and her husband Patrick, handed her from provider to provider and sent her home. She and Patrick had built their life in Duxbury. And by every outward measure, it was a good one. They had their first child, Cora, in 2017. Lindsay loved being a mother, present, engaged, the kind of person who takes her five-year-old to the pediatrician on a Tuesday morning and then comes home and plays with the kids in the snow and sends pictures to the family. But after Cora was born, something shifted. Postpartum anxiety, manageable. She got treatment. She got through it. Life continued. Wasn't alarming. It was handled. And if you've ever gone through this, if you've ever experienced this as a mother or as the partner of someone, you know how debilitating and scary and hellish this scenario can be. And if you've never, well, then you are utterly freaking clueless. If you are sitting there going, postpartum schmartum, or whatever you're saying, if you're dismissing that as like nothing, then you are clueless. Educate yourself. We'll help you do that. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube as we work through this. There's a lot to get through in this case. That's why we're doing a five-part series on it this week as we get closer and closer to a potential trial with Lindsay Clancy. I've seen so many comments where it's just monster, killer, destroy, like, this woman's never going to be okay again, ever. Her family's never going to be okay again. But guess who's standing by her side? Her family. Not because they're stupid, but because they're educated. Because they understand, because they know what happened here. So I caution you, as easy as it is to go to the outside of this one and want to throw stones and, you know, light the village on fire and throw the pitchforks at her. I get it. And there's a lot of cases where the mother has the pitchforks coming. I don't know that this is one of them. So as we work through it, give me your thoughts. There was another child, Dawson. This time the postpartum experience was harder to treat, harder to manage, harder to name. She saw a psychiatrist. She worked through that. But according to expert analysis cited in the civil malpractice lawsuit she filed in January 26, this is reportedly when her underlying bipolar disorder first emerged, though it was allegedly never identified as such. Not then, not for years. A condition actively shaping her neurological reality allowed to go unnamed because no one connected enough dots to give it a name. It's not a small detail. That is the foundation of what follows. Callan was born in May of 2022. And from the moment of his birth, the people who knew Lindsay best described her as a different person, more frantic than she had ever seemed, more intense, less like herself, the way that was hard to pinpoint, but impossible to miss for the people who loved her. The sleeplessness started, the disconnection from her own body, the growing certainty that something was deeply, fundamentally wrong. Here's what Lindsay Clancy did not do. Hide it, minimize it, or wait for it to pass. She knew something was wrong, and she said so. She sought help almost immediately. She was prescribed medication. According to her lawsuit, it made things worse. And that can happen. Sometimes it takes a bit to find the right one that's going to work for you. That's why a lot of people don't even want to do it. Well, that's why people who have done it don't want to do it again once they found a medication that is working. Because what's it going to do? Especially when you have other underlying conditions going on, like possibly bipolar or other things. According to the lawsuit, it made her more anxious, less able to sleep, more unmoored. She reported this and she kept seeking help. And this matters enormously because what's about to unfold, the next chapter of the story, is not a story about a woman who fell through the cracks because she didn't speak up or didn't take her situation seriously. She did. It's a story about a woman who never stopped speaking up and still couldn't get anyone to hear her correctly. She was a nurse. She knew how to describe symptoms with clinical precision. She knew what to ask for and where to go. She had a husband paying close attention, telling friends that something was deeply wrong, that the medications weren't working, that he was watching his wife deteriorate in real time. Her family drove from out of state to help with the children. She had support, insurance, access, and a medical vocabulary most patients never develop. And still, by the time the final weeks arrived, the prescription list had grown into something that alarmed everyone around her. Antidepressants, antipsychotics, sedatives. Other things too. She told medical staff she was crazy depressed, numb to all emotion, can't feel love. She told them she felt messed up beyond repair. She described thoughts of ending it. She kept showing up and saying these things out loud. According to the malpractice lawsuit she later filed, by the final weeks before January 24th, the deterioration had become something else entirely. Hallucinations arriving, a sense of losing control of her own mind, a terror that she was becoming someone she didn't recognize. She reportedly researched whether someone could be a psychopath and be cured. Not because she was planning anything sinister, but because she was desperately trying to understand what was happening to her and whether it could be reversed. A nurse searching the internet for what is a psychopath, terrified she had become one. She wasn't looking for a blueprint. She was looking for a way back. Patrick, her husband, noticed, her family noticed, detectives reviewing her journal and devices after the fact found documentation of her mental state, her own attempts to name it, track it, stay on top of it. She was keeping records of her own unraveling. She was still trying to manage what was eating her alive right up until the end. There's a version of the story where you look at who Lindsay was before January 24th of 23, the nurse, the mother, the woman who drove her daughter to the pediatrician that morning and played in the snow, and the version that allegedly existed in that basement later that night. And you genuinely cannot bridge the two. They seem like different people. They're not. They're the same woman. At the beginning and the end of the same terrible collapse. What happened in between is what the next chapter is about. She went back again and again. She said exactly what was happening and what she got, according to the lawsuits both she and Patrick have since filed, was rushed appointments, conflicting prescriptions, and discharge papers. Until the morning, the snow pictures were taken, and there was nothing left to stop what came next. The machine saw her. I just never saw her clearly enough. And that distinction cost three children everything they had. If you or someone you know is experiencing postpartum mental health challenges, the National Maternal Mental Health Hotline offers 24/7 support. You can call or text it at 833-943-5746. There's also a link in the description of this episode. And three more parts in this series as we tell it piece by piece every day this week. I hope you'll join us. I hope you'll give us your thoughts in the comments section. I hope you'll help to raise awareness for this disorder, this hellish veil that comes over so many mothers. It's something that has a stigma to it. It's something that people don't talk about. They don't want to talk about. They don't like to talk about it. Some of you can't. I mean, sometimes the problem a lot of times in these situations, when you're in the throes of this hell, you don't even know what's going on. And you're just trying to figure out what's going on. Because you're at a point in life where everything should be good. You survived giving birth to a healthy child. So why do you feel the way you do? Because it's nonsensical. And on the outside, all you get is people going, well, it should be great. You got this. That doesn't help anything. It doesn't change anything, no matter how good intentioned someone is to pointing out the obvious. It is a hellish place to be. And it's very real and it's very dangerous. And it comes with not a lot of understanding from the public. So if there's anything we're doing in this, I hope it's raising some awareness for that and better understanding. Should you or someone close to you ever be unfortunate enough to have to go through it? Your thoughts in the comment section. We'll continue our conversation there. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for The New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public would be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too. Because where you get your information matters.